Hello, my name is Haley Palumbo, and this is Unknown America on WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. Unknown America is a weekly radio show that casts a light on the lesser-known people, places, events, and otherwise overlooked aspects of American history, be they mysterious, dark, comical, strange, or otherwise valuable. This week's episode is a bit less formal and all about tornadoes, their first recorded instances in America, their impact on the infrastructure of some parts of the country, tornado-induced supernatural beings, a couple of accounts of living through them, and some other fun stuff. Stay tuned. There are no instruments that sound exactly like a tornado siren. Some are similar when processed in a certain way, but there isn't anything that comes close to being a totally perfect mimic. You can't play tornado sirens on the radio for very obvious reasons, so I can't demonstrate one right now, but it's relatively likely that you've heard one at some point over the course of your life. And there's nothing quite like the feeling of dread you get hearing a tornado siren. Even when it's just a test, it's really frightening to hear one. Up close, it's ear-splittingly loud, anywhere from 100 to 135 decibels. But somehow it's more frightening to hear it the farther away from it you get, as sometimes a shadowy figure off in the distance is. Hearing the lilting and faraway tones carried by the breeze through an open window inspires a fear that's hard to describe and not really like anything else I've felt before. It's a strange sense of terror and excitement, because you don't know exactly what's about to happen. Will the tornado just pass through? Will it destroy my house? Will it touch down and then disappear? There's no way to know the exact answer to any of these questions, which is something that's inherently frightening about all extreme weather. You can't be sure exactly what's going to happen. Anything could change at any moment. You just have to wait and see. Some of the earliest recorded instances of tornadoes were during the 1800s, when the U.S. Army began studying them extensively. The tornado sirens used today were not utilized. There was no technology that could create something as prolonged and as loud as the civil defense sirens introduced later on, so people had to find different means of alerting their area. Anything that was capable of creating a loud noise was used. People were alerted via instruments, horns and church bells, and sometimes cannons. Some simply ran through the town and yelled. One plan from the 1800s called for telegraph wires that snapped in high wind, triggering the mechanism of a cannon. As one can imagine, these alerts did not create loud enough of a sound to alert every possible casualty as they do now, so there were likely more deaths, although unrecorded. After it was noted by the Army that these actions tended to create a great deal of panic, as any good siren should do, the alert sounds in all of their forms were banned outright. When a tornado was coming, it was against the law for you to make any kind of spontaneous public outreach to usher people to safety. In 1886, using the word tornado was banned in all weather forecasts by the Army as to not incite panic and potential trampling incidents. While it is good to avoid public trampling and chaos, banning this sort of alert likely cost many lives. The ban remained in place until a staggering 1948. On March 20th, 1948, a massive tornado tore apart 50 of the Air Force's aircraft, which caused the United States to start thinking more seriously about how exactly to warn the country about potential threat by tornadoes. This is also the day that the ban of the use of tornado in forecasts fell. I will say that it's unfortunate that it took destruction of United States property to get the country to take such a severe and devastating weather event with so little research done on it seriously, but at least it was finally being studied in a real capacity. It would be a really long time, 1970, before civil defense sirens, introduced during wartime, would become used regularly to warn people of tornadoes. The time between 1970 and when tornadoes were recorded was littered with casualties that could have been prevented if a good alert system was in place. While sirens did cause a degree of what the U.S. Army would have referred to as mass hysteria, but nowhere to the degree they had figured, it remains one of the most impactful ways to get a large group of people's attention and warn them that they are in very immediate danger. What sound is more instantly identifiable than a siren is? There are very few that incite those immediate feelings of panic in a person and that are more widely recognized. As a side note, I spent a few hours listening to various sirens from all over the world. If you're interested in hearing a really scary one, check out New Zealand's. And if you're interested in hearing the exact opposite of New Zealand's, try Japan. Quite frankly, the least frightening siren I've ever heard. I'm in the Midwest, Illinois, a very recent member of the group of scientifically recognized states where tornadoes happen most. Like really recent, I think we were inducted just a couple of days ago. But most everyone I know has a tornado story or knows somebody who has a tornado story somewhere else in another Midwestern state. I have two. One is vague and sometimes I question it. It's painted in watercolor in my brain. It's so washed out that I barely know if it's something that happened or if it's something that took place in a dream. My late mother and I are standing on a porch or at a back window. I'm in her arms, a baby. I don't know what state we're in other than it's Midwestern. It must be either Illinois or Minnesota because I was born in one and raised in the other. We're staring out over a field at a tornado. The tornado looms in the dark sky, far enough not to scare me. Eventually, we head to the basement and wait it out. Whether or not this was a dream, it was certainly memorable enough to remain in my memory for nearly three decades. I also have a definite story. I'm living in my house in Forest Park, Illinois, about 4 or 5 years ago. Around 9 p.m., a tornado sweeps over a town 2 miles away from where I'm huddled in my basement. It's the town the mall is in. It damages a couple of buildings. Trees fall on cars. I'm really scared. I'm afraid it's going to hit the house. It's not like my dream or childhood memory, where I'm tucked away safely in the arms of a parent. Luckily, everything turns out okay in the end. Around 10 p.m., I leave my basement and go upstairs. I look outside fearfully and see that the only significant damage in my immediate area is part of a neighbor's trees lying across the middle of the road. I learn that 7 tornadoes touched down that night, most of them not too far from where I'm living. Tornadoes are nearly otherworldly. Emotionless columns stretching down from the heavens, picking up cars and dumpsters and big chunks of houses and sometimes water and very, very rarely sometimes snow, and sending it sailing through the air. They pick up people. They picked up a man named Matt Sucher, who was carried 1,307 feet, all within the safety of his mobile home. Then he was thrown from the tornado and sailed over a barbed wire fence where he woke up. Nobody has ever traveled as far as Matt did and lived through it. And he almost certainly emerged a different person. Really, everyone emerges from a tornado a bit differently from who they were when they ran down to their basement, regardless of whether or not it destroys anything that belongs to them. Having tangible evidence that you're really at the mercy of the world around you is something that you never really forget. You could spend your life accruing resources, spend them all on building a home, buying big and small things, and then in an instant, have it all taken away, forcing you to start life over from scratch. In Tornado Alley, a large stretch of land that spans the middle of the country, this is a known fact among the people that live there. When traveling through it, the old money feeling you get in some places on the Far East Coast, or the sense of magical ancient permanence of the West Coast, a landscape littered with spirit totems in their many forms, neither feeling are present in Tornado Alley. Things seem like they're used to being picked up and thrown around, or like they'll be picked up and thrown around at some point in the near future. Disposable. A TV dinner landscape. Unlike other parts of the country, where structures and life itself is a matter of fact, and nothing is likely to be destroyed spontaneously, There's a liminal sense, a lack of permanence in the central and midwestern U.S. that's infused into everyday life. I spent a great deal of my young adulthood driving through Tornado Alley. There are so many barren cornfields and towns that I would refer to as being fleeting. They all look the same. Big green fields with neutrally colored duplexes, all built within the past few decades or even less. If you navigate to Google Maps and drop the little yellow guy onto Cato, Oklahoma, for example, one of the top 10 places in the United States most impacted by tornadoes, you'll see a small and relatively barren town with plain and new-looking houses, brand new fences, and wide open fields where something likely stood that is no longer there. Iowa, part of Tornado Alley, is especially this way, I find. The buildings you see there generally do not have a feel about them like they're matter of facts of the state. They're not really ornate or storied, but obviously constructed within the past 50 years. There are of course many exceptions, beautiful old movie houses and farms, but they were built like they anticipated their possible destruction, incredibly sturdy, like they could withstand most anything, which they have, and they likely will for a long time. In some places, tornadoes are so frequent that anything that isn't built in a way that will withstand a tornado will inevitably be wiped out, which has a really big impact on the way things look. Regardless of this, people generally rebuild. You'll find many people happily living in these areas, people who've been there for generations and have no intention of moving anytime soon. The cost of living in Tornado Alley is, from what I understand, significantly less than a very large part of the country. Also, when your family has its roots in a place, it's hard to pick up and go, especially in rural communities like you find all over the place in Iowa. All this makes me wonder what life is like in a place like Cato, Oklahoma. Do you feel a sense of transience all of the time? Like no matter how hard you plant your post in the ground, it's bound to get torn out and thrown away? Does it make living there feel odd? Does rebuilding again and again and again feel exhausting? At the end of the day, is it worth all the effort? A random thought about tornadoes and where they happen. I woke up this morning thinking about Hawaiian tornadoes. I thought they were probably impossible, but upon starting my research for this episode, I learned that there is no place in the United States where a tornado is completely impossible. They happen everywhere, and Hawaii isn't an exception. Hawaii has about one tornado a year, most of which are EF0 tornadoes. Wind speeds of an EF0 rarely exceed that of a car moving slow on the highway, about 65 miles per hour at their minimum. EF0 tornadoes generally do not cause any fatalities. No Hawaiian tornadoes recorded since 1950 have ever caused a person to die. Hawaiian tornadoes can cause damages to some extent, but a vast majority of them appear for a little while, drift across white sand, and dissipate just as quickly as they formed, or form over the water and live their short life as a waterspout. Encountering a tornado in Hawaii is perhaps frightening to some, but for the most part a pretty amazing novelty, and something they're unlikely to see again for a very long time, if ever. Despite Tornado Alley being nowhere near either of them, most of the earliest recorded instances of tornadoes occurred either in Massachusetts or West Virginia. The earliest mentioned instance of what could be a tornado in the United States was in 1643. The show isn't called Unknown Italy or Unknown Sardinia, so I won't speak about it much, but the first recorded tornado ever was in Sardinia in the year 200. Due to the lack of information about the American event, it's generally not referred to as a tornado, rather a wind event that, while somewhat unlikely, could have been a hurricane too, or simply a very strong gust of wind. The instance's only recorded documentation came from Massachusetts Bay Colony Governor John Winthrop. He had this to say: "There arose a sudden gust at northwest, so violent, for half an hour, it blew down multitudes of trees. It lifted up a meeting house at Newbury, people being in it. It darkened the air with dust, yet through God's great mercy it did no hurt, but only killed one Indian with the fall of a tree. It was straight between Lynn and Hampton." Outside of this brief account of the event, there's not a whole lot to go off of, so it's not considered to be the first official documentation, rather a somewhat shaky description of something that could have happened. What is considered to be the first actual official documentation in America came a bit later, in 1671, from a visitor to nearby Rehoboth, Massachusetts, I could easily be pronouncing that wrong, so bear with me. Reverend William Adams of Ipswich was visiting on October 16th. His account of what he saw is very clear and, in my opinion, can't be mistaken for anything other than a tornado. He wrote that the tornado was carrying about 20 rods, or 330 feet, in breadth, tearing up by the roots or breaking the bodies of almost all trees within its compass, saving for only some small and low ones, and it is thought in all probability to have gone 15 miles in length. Since Rehoboth at this time was very sparse and unpopulated, it's unlikely there were any fatalities and only trees and the occasional piece of property were destroyed, but there's no definitive record of whether or not this is the case. Given by his description, it sounds like there's a good chance that the only things that were destroyed in the place were trees. The first confirmed fatality caused by a tornado was in Massachusetts as well, just a few years later, in 1680. One person died. Not a whole lot is known about the tornado or the fatality that I can find, other than the fatality was a servant. It's a shame that more isn't known about them. Today we have a solid frame of reference about what a tornado actually is, why they occur, and how to protect ourselves from them. A servant in 1680 likely had very little to no frame of reference for what they were seeing and what was ending their life. It could easily have been, to them, the hand of God sprouting from the sky and plucking them off the face of the earth or dropping debris on them for reasons totally unknown to them. That is one of the many mercies and comforts provided to us by scientific research. When it's our time to go, we generally know exactly what's going on and have a vague idea of how the last handful of moments are going to feel. Thanks to the internet and published work, we can see a photograph of a tornado within seconds of one occurring to us. A servant in 1680 had probably never seen a depiction of a tornado illustrated. They definitely never saw one photographed, as the first photograph of one did not occur for hundreds of years. So what they encountered that day, a complete unknown, could have been frightening to them in a way that many people today will, for better or worse, never get to experience. The very first known depiction of a tornado in the United States didn't occur until 1884, hundreds of years later, when a photograph was taken of one. The photo was taken by somebody in Garnett, Kansas, on April 24, 1884. It occurred just after the Enigma tornado outbreak, a huge outbreak of tornadoes with an uncertain amount of fatalities, but they likely broke 200. The image is one of my favorite photographs ever. I believe that the tornado is distant. It's really hard to tell if a tornado you're looking at is a comfortable distance from you, especially when there's nothing standing between you and the tornado. But in this case, the tornado is partially obscured by several buildings. They appear to be houses. Given what Garnett was like in 1884, a good-sized town, it's likely there were people's homes, but it's hard to know for sure. Given the relatively faraway buildings between the photographer and the tornado, I'm led to believe the photographer was not in harm's way when they took it, and was probably at a pretty safe viewing distance. This doesn't make the photograph any less exciting to look at, though. First off, the tornado is really big. It's not wide as the most destructive tornadoes generally are, the sort of tornado you're probably imagining, but it's long and snake-like, twisting and curled up, cast down from the sky like God threw down a rope. The bottom is very thin and tight, and at the top of the funnel it unfurls into a big black cloud. Even when rendered in sepia, you can tell the cloud is incredibly dark, but the funnel itself is quite light and blurry, giving the impression that it was in very active motion when the photo was taken. Given the somewhat crude nature of photography in the late 1800s, you can assume taking this photo was a lot more work than it would be today. The photographer, I can't find their name, probably had to stand still for a while to capture a perfect image, but I'm not totally sure about that. I'm glad they did, because it's a truly beautiful photograph and a somewhat rare thing, a photograph from the 1800s that's full of action, life, and movement. It captures the essence of a tornado, something nearly supernatural, unpredictable, and quite unlike anything else. Dropping down from seemingly nowhere and embedding itself into your memory, it's really hard to forget. Out of sheer curiosity and for fun, I went on to Google Patents, which is basically a giant database full of various people's patents. It's really entertaining to waste time on. I looked up the word tornado on Google Patents to see what tornado-related inventions were being dreamt up, and here are some that I found to be interesting and kind of crazy. A micro-tornado tissue cutting and removal method and apparatus. It's a drill-like device that creates a tiny cyclone of sand-like material that's used as a drill by dentists to make incisions in gums and to clear away plaque. A device that harnesses wind energy from tornadoes and converts it into electricity that can be stored and used later. A portable modular tornado safety shelter that can be kept in your car. A giant gun that shoots a liquid that freezes a tornado in its tracks and destroys it. A tornado protection net. And a giant gun that shoots out shockwaves that destroy tornadoes. These ideas to me kind of demonstrate the frame of mind people fall into when thinking about tornadoes. Something as powerful as one is hard to consider in a frame of mind that is anything less than fantastic and unrealistic, resulting in these what-if sorts of concepts that are not easily executed in real life. I suggest looking some of these patents up and reading about them and viewing the blueprints and diagrams, some of which were seemingly drawn with a great deal of passion. They're very inspiring to me. I love wild and unrealistic ideas, and these ideas, a gun that freezes a tornado on sight and a net that captures tornadoes, are about as wild and unrealistic as they get. Go give them a look if you have any spare time. A surprisingly contested aspect of the tornado is what is widely referred to as the eye. Surely you've heard somebody reference it before. I thought its existence was a known part of the anatomy of the tornado, but I guess not. According to some, the eye of a tornado is the spot in the dead center of a tornado that is silent and quiet and still. I find wildly varying opinions on whether or not a tornado has a proper eye, like some claim that they do. Some reliable sources state that the very concept of an eye is ridiculous and dramatized and likely originated from a film from the 1990s. And others say that they are likely real and have been detected on radar time and time again and pledge their certainty. There are two known, although scientifically unconfirmed, first-person accounts of a person who spent time in the eye of a tornado, and these accounts existed long before the film did. Both of the accounts happen to come from farmers, one in Kansas and one in Texas, neither of which knew each other, about 25 years apart. The accounts mirror one another, which to me might indicate that the farmers had a very similar experience. The initial account comes from Will Keller, a resident of Greenburg, Kansas. On June 22, 1928, while inspecting the aftermath of a recent hailstorm on his wheat fields with his family, Keller noticed an umbrella-shaped cloud in the distance. Sensing the potential formation of a tornado, he quickly ushered his family into their storm cellar. However, before joining them, he paused to observe the approaching funnel clouds, a familiar sight for him. He stood quietly and did not move, watching the tornado closely. Keller described being transfixed as the tornado passed directly overhead, noting an eerie stillness and a very strong gassy odor, with lightning illuminating the swirling walls that surrounded him. Then, as soon as it appeared, it passed over him, his family still huddled in the cellar. Remarkably, his house remained unscathed. According to him, nothing was damaged, and his neighbor's home was totally destroyed. The second account, provided by a man named Roy Hall, further supports Keller's experience. Hall, a soybean farmer from McKinney, Texas, recalls an incident one spring afternoon in 1951. As a storm approached, he sent his family indoors for safety, but stayed outside to monitor the situation. Observing green rain sheets preceding the tornado, he eventually sought shelter indoors as hail began to fall all around him. Suddenly, the surroundings fell silent before the tornado struck, tearing off his roof and exposing him to the swirling vortex overhead. Inside the tornado, Hall described a smooth wall of clouds illuminated by flashes of lightning with smaller twisters swirling around him. Despite the destruction it wrought, including claiming the lives of 100 Texans, Hall and his family emerged unharmed once the tornado had passed. All that remained was the wreckage of his family home, framed by a brilliant blue sky. Both of the accounts relay moments of strange quiet, meditative moments in the midst of chaos. I sort of envisioned both stories as time stopping for just a moment, and both accounts do have a cinematic way about them, like they would be very interesting to see as a movie. but that doesn't necessarily make them fake. I also don't really see what a farmer would gain lying about this sort of thing, especially if it's just a personal account told to a family member or friend. I suppose we'll never really know the entire truth. I'm inclined to believe them both, but I'll let you draw your own conclusion. I'm going to end this episode with something supernatural. I learned recently of the Joplin butterfly people. In Joplin, Missouri, in 2011, there was an EF5 tornado, one of the strongest that can occur. It leveled all of the buildings in the area, and 158 people lost their lives. After the incident, some noticed their children talking about butterfly people. When asked for more detail, the children described that in their moments of terror, they were visited by large entities that lifted them from the debris and protected them from the violent winds of the tornado. All of the children described the entities in the exact same way. Large humanoids with the heads of butterflies, antennae, and massive wings. They honestly resemble Mothman if you go look at a picture. Some children also claimed that they saw these creatures carry people to the afterlife. Children would draw the butterfly people, both in groups and by themselves, and mysteriously all of the drawings looked really similar. Many theories have come to pass. The most popular theory is that it was a case of mass hysteria induced by the stress of the tornado. Believers in the supernatural and the religious think that the butterfly people were angels sent to protect their children, described in a way by the children that they were a bit more familiar with than the concept of an angel, if that makes sense. It's impossible to know for sure, just as it's impossible to know a lot of things for sure. According to some residents of the town, though, the idea of butterfly people helping them to safety gave them courage and motivation to keep rebuilding and move past tragedy. In the wake of something so profoundly frightening, I guess I wouldn't mind the help of a butterfly person, too. This has been Unknown America on WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. See you next week. Haley Palumbo, signing off.